Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Samantha Cruz.
Keith Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
not, Fredita!
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the CS hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you're watching us on Rockfin or Rumble, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks a million. We appreciate the support. We couldn't do it without our sponsors. If you want to go to chemicalfreebody.com and take a look at what they've got cooking, they've got some of the best vitamin supplements available. Take a look at the detox bundle, if you will. That's something that'll give you Green 85, not to mention four different types of capsules that you just take during the morning and take you 5 seconds to do it. So 90-day program, take a look. Detox bundle, that'll lean you out pretty good. If you find something that you like over there, the discount code is macro on your way out. So take a look, chemicalfreebody.com. You'll at least get something that works. Holy moly, what a victory that is these days. And also thanks to the folks at Legal Shield. They've been doing it for 50 years in the United States and in Canada. They get you access to an attorney in your area for a very, very reasonable price. $30 a month, dollar a day. Knock out all those documents that you need to have. Last will and testament, medical directive, financial power of attorney, all that stuff. Gotta have it. Gotta have it. And they make it pretty easy to do it too. You get an app on your phone. You just push a couple buttons. A checklist comes out. You like just click all the things, all the documents that you need, and then it just submit it and they call you within a day. Set up an appointment in your area at the law firm that works with Legal Shield. And like you just knock it out. So, I mean, they can't make it any easier. They quite literally can't make it any more affordable. So if you're interested, go to www.don'tgetpushedaround.com and see what you think. If you carry a gun or you run a small business and you want some sort of outsourcing your legal help, take a look because they have some options for you over there. There's quite a bit going on. Don'tgetpushedaround.com is the place to go. Well, if you are on Twitter, the former Twitter, it's always going to be Twitter to me. because I'm old and you can't teach an old dog new tricks. But if you're on Twitter, then you probably need to be following inversionism, because you're going to get a nice education on this criminal big pharma cartel that's running our world. And super excited to talk to Dolan from inversionism. What's going on, man? Let's get weird into the medical tyranny, because it feels like it's everywhere and it's unavoidable.
Oh, indeed it is, man. Yeah, my name's Dolan. I already said so. It's good to be here, man. I've been listening. I don't think I've ever missed an episode of Union of the Unwanted.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
I don't think I've ever missed that. And then I've been catching up on your pod for the past couple of weeks. I've been getting on a bunch of podcasts the past few weeks. I've been trying to... It's hard. I mean, I work outside most of the day at work, so I got a podcast in my ear or an audiobook or lecture or music sometimes. But yeah, man, happy to be here.
Well... happy to have you on to talk about this stuff, because I've been, sometimes you find like-minded accounts on social media, and you find that sometimes they can frame things in a way that makes sense, that you go, oh, God, yeah, I wish I could. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. I've been following your work on the pharmaceutical industry in general. But, I mean, you know how that goes. It just kind of leads you to everything else. But I know what led me into the pharmaceutical industries in question surrounding that group of gangsters, but what was it for you? Did you get, like, did you see the inside of the beast?
Yeah, well, I would say my first foray into it was, kind of start from the beginning, like, what really started me down the health path. I got a flu vaccine when I was 17, swine flu shot, 2009 one, and I was required to play football. And that really did some damage to me. And initially, like, you know, I didn't really have strong views on vaccines. Like, I really didn't know much about it, like most people. And then you get that shot, and, like, as soon as you walk out of the doctor's office, your vision starts getting weird, very brain foggy, fatigue. You start feeling sick, and, you know, they'll tell you, like, oh, that happens sometimes. It's just, you know, the whatever inactivated virus stimulating your immune system. And I get home from that. I go to bed pretty much right away, wake up in the morning, still feeling crappy. And I go to eat eggs like I had been doing for years, and I was trying to put on some muscle mass for football, so I was trying to get my protein intake in. And I distinctly remember, as soon as I walked over to the stove and my mother was cooking the eggs, as soon as I smelled them, it was like an ice pick headache. Like, I felt it in my head in, like, a way I had not felt a headache before. I ate the eggs anyways because I was hungry and I wanted to eat. I immediately had a reaction to them. I started getting this full body hives, and then over the next few days, weeks, I started getting cystic acne, eczema popping up. And then I went to the doctor. They told me that it wasn't the vaccine and I most likely had mono or something like that. They test me, use RT-PCR. I'm sure you're familiar with the chicanery with that test, and told me I had mono. But before that, they gave me antibiotics before discerning it was mono, and that gave me an even worse reaction, because, you know, antibiotics kind of stunt your detoxification system. And that flu vaccine had mercury in it. And I was talking about this, I was just on Nephilim Death Squad. I've also been on Grime America and Rare Candy, so if you've been listening to those, this might be a repeat of the story. But before that experience, I was a much different person. Like, I was much more social. I had a lot more friends. I feel like I was much more, like, cognitively able, in a sense. And I was just a happier kid. Like, I was always outside. I always wanted to be around people. I was very social. I get that flu vaccine, and I turn into a recluse. I don't want to be around people. And there's a documentary, Trace Amounts, where another gentleman had a very similar experience, where after he got the flu vaccines, or another vaccine that had mercury in it, he got mercury poisoning and had the same thing, where he became, you know, paranoid, kind of flighty, reclusive, didn't want to talk to people. And that's really when my life kind of fell apart. I went to college, you know, I had the atheist phase, like most people do when they go to college, and I was trying to figure out how to fix my skin mostly, because I had really bad cystic acne that hurt. Like, it hurt when I smiled or I talked, and that didn't help me with my socializing either. I was very self-conscious about it. And I dealt with that for years, and I was just trying all kinds of things to fix it. And then, you know, go to the dermatologist, they'll tell you that, oh, has nothing to do with your diet. Acne has nothing to do with what you eat. Here, take this antibiotic, which was doxycycline first, and then tetracycline, which caused a Crohn's flare. Like, that's when I had gut problems before this, but they're very, like, mild, like sometimes some diarrhea, like most kids have in high school when they eat the wrong thing. But that really kicked off, like, severe Crohn's, where it hurt all the time, you know, shit blood every now and again. And I just kept down that path of just troubleshooting and using myself as a guinea pig. Like, I was quite neurotic about it, to where I would do a food journal and write down everything I ate that day, what supplements I took, and how I felt. I did that every day for like 7-8 years.
Wow.
And in doing that, it kind of helped me troubleshoot and like learn that like sometimes foods have a very noticeable, profound effect on you. So yeah. the one pattern I picked up on pretty often, especially when I was vegan, because I'll tell you about that whole history. I did 5 grams of mushrooms and went vegan after, because I watched
it happens
plant-based documentary before that. But I figured out, like, oh, my voice gets higher when I eat kale. What is causing that? My wrist hurts when I eat spinach. Like, what is causing that? And that was starting to, like, the inkling of, like, understanding that sometimes foods can give you varied reactions. And so I tried all these diets, like vegan, vegetarian. I did, like, paleo, low FODMAP, like, pescatarian, the Mediterranean diet. I was trying all these different diet variations, along with using every supplement known to man. Like, I'm not kidding, like, tens of thousands of dollars on supplements. And when I was vegan, especially, is when I was taking the most. You know those 4x7 pill planners? Where you have, yeah, like morning, noon, evening, night. I had 2 of those packed to the brim that I would take every day throughout the day. Yeah. Never missed it. So I always wonder how much damage I did to myself with that shit. But I was very neurotic about it. I ended up doing like a keto, but it was like a dirty plant-based keto. And that gave me a bit of relief, honestly. Like, my brain fog got a little bit better. I had better energy. Some of my gut stuff was a little bit better sometimes. And then one day, I decided to do a almond flour, coconut flour bun. And I don't know if you're familiar with both of those in like the keto space. Like, it's like a low carb kind of bun. And I shit blood for like 3 months and I thought I was going to die. Like, that was the worst my health had ever been. This is like also, I just quit a job and moved back into, I moved into a new home. That new home also had black mold in it. So that was another fact.
Oh, baby. Yeah, that's a huge problem.
Confluence of events.
Yeah, that gets underreported like crazy.
Yes, it does. Black mold basically shuts down your detoxification system. Fun fact. It turns off NRF2 and makes your bile not produce as much. You have less glutathione. It's one of the most toxic things on earth. But at that point, I was just desperate to do anything, and I was really struggling. Like I said, I had this impending sense of doom constantly for months, like a real, like, in a way I never felt before. Like, I legit felt like I was going to die. And when you're shitting blood every day, that's usually, you've got a reason to. Yeah, you're probably going to die if that continues. So I was listening, I've been listening to Rogan's podcast for years. I mean, like most of us, we've all been listening to Rogan. And he brought Sean Baker on and talked about the carnivore diet. And at first, I thought it was dumb as shit. I had all the like the preconceptions from the vegan plant-based circles that, you know, red meat causes bowel cancer, saturated fat causes heart disease, and that whole shebang. And initially, I dismissed it. I was curious, but I thought it was just stupid on the face. Yeah. And then Jordan Peterson went on there like a month later. This is like, I think, early 2018, January 2018. And that really was the, okay, I should try this. The thing that really like convinced me was the eye floaters. I've had a bad left eye my whole life, and I think that's because I put too many antibiotics on my eye when I was a kid, along with a vaccine injury, which I'll tell you about my injury when I was 2. I've been injured twice. Maybe more than that. I just didn't know. Like, it's hard to connect it because you get so many vaccines through school, like every event that comes. So,
yeah. And it's intentionally... overlaps.
Yeah, it's obfuscated.
With,
yeah,
with the other ones, so you know there's plausible deniability for every.
Well, it's always one an infection. It's always some pathogen. It's never, you know, the toxic injection. But
never.
Yeah,
never.
I heard that podcast, and he brought up eye floaters and how they went away. And I had that my whole life in my left eye, where it looks like worms in your eye when you're looking at the sky. A lot of people nowadays have it. It's an autoimmune thing. And that was. He also had some like back pain, joint pain too, which I had severely. I had Crohn's disease and ankylosing spondylitis. Those were the 2 autoimmune conditions that I developed after the flu vaccine, and then antibiotics, and then all the other meds doctors were giving me just exacerbated it. Yeah. And I was desperate for the back pain, especially. It was a constant thing from like age 17 to 26, 27, when I finally found the carnivore diet. So I went out, bought a bunch of meat, tried it, and in 2 weeks, I was a completely different person. All my symptoms were gone. I had no back pain, no gut problems. I still had some diarrhea like most people do on the carnivore diet, but I had a spiritual experience, and my perception of the world changed. I wanted to be social again, and I was very reclusive before. It was a profoundly eye-opening experience that made me realize everything's inverted. Everything is inverted. That was like the key moment in my mind where I figured out – that there's just malice in the medical system and they're just farming you. They're just literally farming your shit health for money at its core. And then you get the history of it. But yeah, man. And then I'm here now. You're talking it's about funny. Carnivory.
I know. It's funny that there's always something that leads people down this path where they start asking questions about, you know, the most insidious component of it is that people are, they think they're being proactive, you know? I mean, they're trained, like, go see the doctor. And, you know, as guys, we're like, I don't want to see the doctor, you know? And it's sort of a, you know, so if you actually make the decision that you're going to, okay, I'll be an adult and I'll make the phone call and I'll go see the doctor and everything, you would think that you're putting yourself in the position for good things to happen. And in actuality, you're just walking right into a health trap with these people.
Yes,
and in actuality,
it's the meat grinder.
And so you're doing what you think is the right thing. You're trying to be proactive and take your health into your own hands by going to see the doctor. The trap is that the doctor is not selling you something that's going to make you healthy. He's going to put you on a plan that's going to keep you a customer for the rest of your life. And that's why I've been dealing with talking to doctors now, and they'll ask questions about the types of medications. You know, what kind of medications are your mom on? And I just say vitamins, and they all just go, what? Like
vitamins.
It is unheard of to not be on it. It's not. Is she on prescription medications? It's how many and which ones? And my answer is they're none. And they're like,
and coincidentally,
wow.
Third leading cause of death is just medications. And then if you start, like, if you dig deeper on that and you look at how they treat heart disease, cancer, and diabetes and the drugs they use and, like, the nutritionist recommendations, like, you could argue that the medical system in entirety is murdering millions of people every single year. And people can't wrap their head around it. And that's like a psychological warfare thing, in my opinion, with like movies, TV shows, and how doctors are portrayed as these, like, these heroes.
Sure.
And I will say, like, most doctors have good intent. They're not doing it to harm you intentionally, but there are incentives that make them have to look the other way or keep quiet or not suggest something they know would help, and they have to stay within a certain paradigm or their insurance goes up because, you know, they said, oh, maybe you should try a carnivore diet. God forbid they ever say that. If they ever do anything outside of the medical guidelines, especially when it comes to mental health symptoms, that's a whole other demonic area of the medical system, and how all they do is just go symptoms, look in the manual, give this pill. You come back in a couple weeks, maybe up the dosage if it's not helping. And I had a really bad experience with that in college. I took Prozac for 6 months and got fat, put on some weight, you know, standard stuff when people start taking. I was also eating terribly, 2 liters of Coke a day, you know. And I quit, and I had brain zap for six months, and I was very agitated and angry for that entire period when I quit cold turkey. Fun to find out that, you know, Prozac is literally just all fluorine and fluoride. Like,
I know
that's the entire, that's most of the structure.
It's like, well, we fixed you. Well, how'd you fix the problem? Well, we made you stupid so that you don't care about the problem anymore. And you go, oh, dude, good, thank you. That's
you know what gets me the most?
We hit you with a baseball bat in the back of the head. Now you have to worry about the big lump in your head and not that your girlfriend left you.
What gets me the most about it is I went back home because I had left college. I quit the pro. Like, everything kind of fell apart for me. Like, my whole life kind of fell apart. And I went back home to do school from home, and I went to my doctor I've been going to all my life, and I just told him, like, hey, you know, I'm, like, a little depressed, kind of lost all my friends, and he, like, talked to me for, like, 3-4 minutes and gave me Prozac. Like, that was it. Didn't ask me about my diet, didn't ask if I was exercising, was I getting sunlight, didn't ask about anything else, what other symptoms, just, here's a pill, come back in a couple of weeks. And now, like, you know now that they get money from that. They get a kickback from that. They get some value from prescribing that drug to me. So there's that perverse incentive. So, I mean, I don't view that as him, like, doing something out of the goodness of his heart or being a good doctor. That's just him going, hey, I have an opportunity to make some cash here. Same thing with vaccines. You know, the incentive programs that they have. If you get 80% of your patients vaccinated, you get fat checks at the end of the year.
Yeah, you do.
So you find those perverse incentives everywhere in modern medicine. And it's like the for-profit medical system and the confluence of corporations and how we treat disease and how involved they are in determining what disease is and what causes it. Like, to its core, it's corrupt, evil, malicious. And you can go back to the history of the medical system, Rockefeller medicine, the westernized allopathic model, cut, burn, poison. They don't want to cure you of anything. They don't want to find root cause. It's just symptom, petroleum-based pill, symptom, pill, over and over.
And when you know that, when you come to understand that, then the game presents itself and you go, okay, yeah. I see. This is one of those things where you are going to have to be responsible for your own education. I was talking to David Avocado Wolf about this with regard mm-hmm. to the getting a cancer diagnosis and then feeling like you have to cram for a final the next day. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's yeah. like you feel like, okay, I need to know as much as possible about this right now because I'm up against the clock. The same happens when you have the epiphany, if you do, that the medical industry is actually trying to kill you, right? Then you go, okay, I have this information. How do I get away around this? Well, you're going to have to be in charge of, if you're waiting for somebody to tell you, you know, if you're waiting for your doctor to give you a referral out to a naturopath, you'll be waiting forever because it's never going to happen, oh, yeah. right? So you have to then take responsibility for your own education on the medical, on the best ways to treat things. Yeah. And that's why I love having these doctors on that I know, or having people that work in the health industry that aren't doctors but know more than doctors, you know, those guys, and having them as resources for people that are out there in the world feeling, maybe they're feeling the same way you feel. They're like, oh man, like I have some of those symptoms for sure. Like I can totally relate to this guy. Like, hey, hang on a second. What'd you say you did? Carnivore diet? Cool. So there's options now for people, and I love that we're not stuck in just the big pharma box. The first step is recognizing it. Then you have to pivot and figure out ways to get around it. And that's kind of where we are now, right? We're in a world where we've got some solutions. Mostly. Out of desperation, we have to. We have no choice.
That's how most people end up here. Like, most people don't realize the medical system's inverted and malicious until they've been harmed by it, or their kid has been.
True.
Like that's what really forces most people out of that system. And I will tell you, man, the amount of time, like looking back, I think the biggest issue is the compartmentalization of it all and the difference in specialists. Like every issue has some different doctor you got to go to, and they don't communicate with each other. They don't look at medication interactions. They don't really have a holistic view on how the whole system works together. Like if you have, let's say, a kidney problem, you go to a kidney doctor, but perhaps your kidney issue is something dietary. Like it could be eating too many oxalates, too many almonds. Like, I speaking of which, when I was vegan, I did these spinach, kale, blueberry, almond milkshakes every day for a year. Got 2 kidney stones, calcium oxalate stones. And I was asking the nephrologist about it. I think is the right term for like her classification, nephrologist or kidney doctor. And I said, what's the most common kidney stone you see? And she said, yeah, calcium oxalate. I think it was like 75-80% of her patients. And I'm like, what could, and that was like the first like little flip in my head where like, could that be something I'm eating? Like, are there oxalates? And I go look up what are high oxalate foods. It's spinach, it's almonds. And I was eating so much of it, I got 2 kidney stones. And that was one of the most painful things I've ever endured in my life. Oh my God, was that rough. Like hallucinating. It was so bad. Like my vision was very octagony and just very, very unpleasant experience. And that's when I quit the plant-based stuff after that. And I started trying the vegetarian like route with like eating more, you know, cheese and dairy and eggs. And that didn't help me either because it was all pasteurized crap dairy. And I found out my egg allergy was way worse than, because I wasn't eating eggs throughout that whole period before that. And I add eggs back in and I get severe chronic fatigue. Eczema comes back. Acne gets way worse. Super bad brain fog.
Yes, like, it's all vaccine damage.
Yeah, and you look at the flu vaccine I got, and coincidentally, you know, it's got aluminum, mercury, and egg proteins in it. Yep. Like, who'd have thought that you inject egg proteins into someone's bloodstream? Because they don't aspirate the needle. They just pump it right into your shoulder, and it can hit. I mean, it disperses into your lymph and your blood system. We know that. Like, the vaccine's an autoimmunity textbook. Yeah. They've looked at the biodistribution of these toxins, and they get everywhere. God forbid you do it to a child. They do it in their thigh, right into an artery maybe, right throughout their whole body, getting 5 at once. And, man, that, I mean, I'm grateful for the experience because that's why I'm here now. It's why I know as much as I know. But it was just a constant onslaught of the medical system fucking my life up, me having to research and figure out what happened, learning more, trial and error. I mean, I went to nutritionists too. They told me to be plant-based. They all told me to have a plant-based diet. You know, eat lots of grains, fruits, vegetables. They said, you know, limit your red meat intake. Go, like, try to get, like, lean red meat because you don't want the fat. Fat's bad for you. And, like, I was so deep in that, like, trust the science world during that period. Yeah. But I still had some questions about vaccines. Like, I was like, maybe just the flu shots aren't good. Maybe, you know. And then it was, like, 2012, 2013, 2014, especially with RFK, where I started, you know, picking up on the fact that there may be some for-profit malice in this. Anyways, I get to the carnivore diet, man, and that was, like I said, a transcendental experience. The change in my consciousness is what was so apparent. Like, how I perceive the world, my brain fog, how much clearer I could think, my memory, everything lifted in such a profound way. And it's been better ever since, especially with raw dairy. Raw dairy
was that too. Was that because you were adding something to your diet, or is it because you were removing something from
your
diet?
For sure. Okay. Removing for sure, plus getting the nutrition. So I think it's a 1-2 thing. And I will say, like, I'm a very pro. I think the carnivore diet is amazing, but I don't think we're supposed to do it forever. I don't think we can just eat muscle meat, salt, and water forever. I do know people who do that, and they're doing great. Like, they're healthy, they're happy. I mean, Sean Baker's a great example. He eats tons of ribeye. He's jacked. He's in good health. But I don't think that that's following our ancestral blueprint. And that's the one thing carnivore took me down was, what did we do before refrigerators? What did we do before modern medicine? How did we used to eat? And I'm sure you've heard of this book, Nutrition and Physical Degeneration by Weston Price. Have you heard of that book?
No.
Oh, okay. You should read it. I swear. Okay. It's the most profound book on nutrition ever written. It was this dentist. I think he's a vegetarian as well. He's traveling the world trying to figure out how these cultures had no cavities without brushing their teeth. You know, expected to find plant-based, like, you know, whole foods kind of thing. Instead, found hyper-carnivores who prepared their plant foods in very certain ways. So instead of eating raw nuts, they would soak them, ferment them, you know, sun dry them, roast them, and then eat them. They were never eating a raw almond or a raw tiger nut or a raw walnut. They were preparing them in specific ways. Same thing with the meat. What do you do without a refrigerator if you have a bunch of meat? If you just killed an animal, how are you supposed to save that meat? You
pack it in salt.
Yeah, well, salt's one. You can also take the muscle meat and hang it in the sun to sun cure, which is biltong. That's pretty much what biltong is like sun-cured meat. You start learning these preparation practices with the use of whey from raw milk. If you're making cheese, whey can also act as a preservative with the beneficial lactobacilli bacteria. Then salt as well, like salt curing various fishes. And then even fermented meat, man. And I know a lot of people think that like the idea of a fermented meat is gross, but every culture did it. There's a paper, I can give you the title of it. The topic was how they used to prepare meat, and they would like fermented fish, or they'd put it in jars, pack it with salt and various spices and whatnot, and ferment the fish. Surströmming, you know, in Swedish culture, it's like pickled herring. It's like rotted fish, very popular food. Oof. And almost all of the European cultures, they all do these like cured meats. You know, prosciutto. Is raw leg of a pig that is aged. And then they slice it. They don't cook it. You're eating raw pig that has been fermented. That's how we used to cure our meat. Yeah, it's like salami. That's how we're supposed to eat our food. We're supposed to prepare it and utilize bacteria to preserve it. We've always been in a coexisting relationship with bacteria. And I think the greatest inversion in Rockefeller medicine is the aversion to microbes. I think that is number one. And you've talked to Andy Kaufman, yeah? Kaufman and his perspective. The more and more I listen to him and Cowan, the more I think they're on point. Like, I have gone back and forth on this and thought maybe there's like a little middle ground. Perhaps there are some, you know, bioengineered bacteria that are a different type. But when you look at our physiology, this is the one thing that we should all look at to determine our diet. A lot of people want to go to, you know, intervention studies and these random controlled trials or epidemiology where it says like, oh, you eat one egg a day, it increases your heart disease by 30%, that kind of nonsense. Right. My view is to just say, fuck all that. Instead, look at your gut physiology, which is a hard science. We can look at the physiology of a cat and know they're a carnivore, a dog, a vulture, and know they're carnivores. Why can't we do the same with humans? And if you do that, you find out we have stomach acid lower than dogs and cats. We have stomach acid that's at the same level as falcons and vultures that eat rotten corpses. Why do we have that adaptation if we're not intended to eat those foods? Why do we have such low stomach acid if we're not intended to eat fermented foods? And then you go look at the ancestral evidence for that in Weston Price's book, and they're eating all kinds of fermented foods, both animal and plant. And I'll give you a good example with liver. Some cultures would take the liver of the animal. Sometimes they eat it fresh. Other times they would use it as a medicine where they would take it, wrap it in the hide of the animal, bury it underground to ferment it, and then unearth it when someone in their tribe was sick and feed it to them, and they get better. And it's that old Native American perspective on eat the organ that's suffering from the animal to repair that organ. And it's because it has all the nutrients your same organ needs to, you know, function and work properly. And I started going down that path, and that really opened my mind to just how inverted and backwards a medical system is, like at its core. And I think the fear of bacteria, the aversion to microbes and fermentation, like everything we love in our culture is fermented, like cheeses, prosciutto, aged meats, salamis, like even the beef that you're buying at the store is dry aged. They all dry age it for a minimum of, I think, a few weeks minimum, like 28 days, 18 days. You understand what I'm saying? Like we've built this aversion to microbes and the proper use of fermentation and curing. And I think that's done the most damage to us, because if you look at our gut, again, our microbes make all of our neurotransmitters. They support our brain.
I wonder if instead of, if you were a doctor that was, who was trying to really help somebody's health, instead of putting them on a cycle of antibiotics, what if you put them on a cycle of carnivore diet, right?
Yeah.
They went through one cycle of that, right? And like you said, they didn't stay on it. They weren't meant to stay on it forever, but they were on it for whatever the amount of time was.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a couple months or whatnot. But instead of, you know, prescribing away the problem, you maybe instruct them with some dietary changes and fix it that way. Of course, there's no money in that.
Yeah.
Unless
well,
you get
you know
the meat industry,
man,
to sponsor you or something like that. I'm sure they can make some money. But
yeah. Well, here's the thing that kind of tipped it off in my mind, and it was just a morbid curiosity, because I get raw milk every week and I turn it into kefir. I ferment my kefir for 4 to 5 days. That's a couple of days longer than most people do. I think most people do 1 or 2 days, you know. But I like mine very acidic and umami and like full of good bacteria. So I bought some tests on Amazon, you know, those like pathogen tests like Enterobacter, Salmonella, E. coli, and my milk tested positive for each of them, yet it's never made me sick. Not once. So why is that? Is it the microbe that's a problem, or is it the terrain? So I'll give you an example. Let's say in my case, I have healthy stomach acid. I can eat all kinds of fermented foods and not get sick. But someone else who's overweight, taking a proton pump inhibitor, eating Tums, which raises stomach acid, pH, they eat that fermented food and they get deathly ill. Is it the microbe or is it the terrain that caused the problem? Same thing with like the flu and vitamin D. You can look up any study on vitamin D levels, and when they get low, people get the flu. Is it the virus causing it, or is it the low vitamin D that reduces your immune system and makes these things become prevalent? But it's a question of causation that gets me.
Yeah.
Like if someone has the flu and my vitamin D is 80 nanograms, I will eat their spit and not get sick. You know what I'm saying? They've done those tests. Andy Kaufman has talked about that, where they have done those challenge tests with healthy people. They inoculate them with someone that is like fluids of someone that is sick, and they don't get sick. So I'm much bigger on the terrain perspective than the microbe being the cause perspective. And that is evidenced by the food I eat.
Yeah. And why can't, in my opinion, the terrain plays an important part regardless of whether you say it's 100% terrain or if it's terrain and germ or whatever. How you treat your body matters.
Yeah.
Period. And and people that
your gut,
that,
especially
your gut. And we're starting to get some interesting information on this. You know, these you know, within the last 10 years, people are starting to understand this. People in the mainstream are starting to ask questions about their gut health. I'll tell you on a personal level with my mom. My mom was, her stomach was hurting really badly, but the thing that triggered it when she went back and looked into what it was that her doctor prescribed her antibiotics for something, and he got the diagnosis wrong. The antibiotics were for something that she didn't have. She had something else, and the antibiotics not only didn't help it, they then kick-started everything else that went after that. And I can't say that it was the... I can't with 100% certainty say that it triggered the cancer, but it certainly preceded the cancer.
I think it does, man.
And I wonder if it kick-started it.
So instead of viewing these bacteria, because I mean, we can look at just the neurotransmitter argument. Those, you can look up papers. I posted about it on my ex a few times. The bacteria like E. coli, Salmonella, Klebsiella, Enterobacter, these bacteria that are attributed to be pathogens that the government wants us to cook out of our food, you find those bacteria in the gut making dopamine, serotonin, noradrenaline, norepinephrine, essential neurotransmitters for your brain. And I'll give you there's examples of people on YouTube. There's a guy named Derek who eats all kinds of rotten meat constantly. There's a dude named Sri Rich who's this like crazy carnivore maniac. I don't like him as a person, but he's a testament. He has fermented liver in a jar for 6 months, ate it, and said he felt high from it. That sounds so disgusting on the surface, right? Like, it sounds so gross, but then you think, blue cheese is that. Blue cheese is moldy, rotten milk. Parmesan is mold, like, is aged, fermented milk. It's fermented for 2 years. So it's like, there's this perspective we have towards meat and this, like, this perception of the bacteria in it always being bad. But I do think that there is a value that cured meats can provide. It's like a prosciutto. Has good bacteria in it. A salami, like a properly made salami or pastrami or any of those cured meats, have good lactobacilli bacteria, as well as meat, like putrefactive bacteria that help you digest meat. So you would say, if you have a problem digesting, you know, like plant foods, a fermented plant food can help you develop an affinity to consume those because it has the bacteria you need to break it down, right? Why is it not the same for meat? Wouldn't it be the same? Wouldn't it be the same perspective for meat? And how we cure those foods. But you, like I said, you can look at what these bacteria do in the body. What they mostly do, and this is something Andy Coffin's talked about, is they consume dead flesh and repair and help repair. They play essential roles in regulating like the pH of your microbiome, the intestinal barrier. They make these films that help prevent things from, you know, leaky gut. They have these very, very integral roles in our immune system, our cognition, our brain. And I'll tell you, man, when I started drinking raw milk and drinking kefir, it made me so much happier. I became a much happier person. I had a much more positive outlook. It changed my being, ultimately. Yeah. And I think it's microbes. And I mean, not just nutrition, but I think it's microbes, too. So you're talking about the cancer relation. I think it's connected.
Well, Tim James saved his life, the owner of Chemical Free Body, by going to the Hippocrates Center and teaching himself about, you know, getting an education on how to heal yourself with food and changing that relationship. And he talked about the physical changes, but he also talked about the mental changes that really threw him off into a brand new orbit that he just looks back on and thinks, God, you know, if it hadn't gotten that bad, I probably wouldn't have made that choice. And you know, the nice thing is that, you know, you've done a lot. You've had to go through it. You've lived through it. You've done the research. You know from the inside what you're talking about. Tim is the same way with his company. Yeah. He knows what it feels like to be fat and out of shape. He knows how uninspiring that is and how it leads to a cascading effect and how it affects you, not just physically, but mentally. And then it starts impacting your relationships. And boy, you know, it's with so much in this world that is out of our control. There are a few things that you just have to make a decision that you want to be, you know, on top of, and controlling the food that you put in your body to the extent that you can afford it and have access to it. And I do fully recognize that that is a barrier for many, many, many people to get high quality food. But if you can do that, then you will find that old adage of garbage in, garbage out is true with food too. And when you clean up your food, you clean up your life.
I'm very big on food quality. I had this discussion with the Nephilim Death Squad folks, and like the more esoteric type of perspective that you should have. Yeah, they're hilarious. We were talking about the rice experiment, which I'm sure you've heard of, where like you put three jars of rice, you put water in it, you love one, you hate one, you ignore one.
No, I've heard of that with ice, but not rice. Yeah, I haven't heard that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, the Miyamoto experiments with like water structure and like structure of it. So I think this is how I view. I have that perspective towards factory farming and the animals I eat, because if you think about it, with the rice experiment, the words you say to that rice have an impact on the mold that grows. And I've done the experiment 3 times. Every single time, the like hate angry rice is red. Red mold every single time. That's a really profound thing. And they've already done that experiment. You know, I think Raven was talking about one where they looked at tears, like tears of laughter and tears of like anger or hate, and the difference in structure. Same thing with the Miyamoto experiments. I think it's not pronouncing his name right, where like certain words change the structure of the water. Now think about that in terms of the animal you're eating. What happens if that animal is on a feedlot eating GMO corn, GMO grains that are full of pesticides, they're getting injected with 50 vaccines, they're abused, they're not taken care of, they're not getting enough sunlight, they're living in this disgusting area where the entire soil is fueled by biosludges, which come from cities where people are shitting and pissing, pharmaceutical drugs, forever chemicals, plastics, and then they're eating that. Like, what happens to the meat of that animal? What happens to the fat of that animal? And then what happens to you when you eat that? And I, like I said, I'm a very self-aware person. I've meditated every day of my life for over 10 years now, give or take, and I'm very like aware of how food affects me, like I told you with the food journal. Yeah. And I do notice a difference when I eat conventional abused meat, personally. I do notice a difference in how I feel, and I feel much clearer, better, happier, and more consistent when I'm eating a healthy, high-quality animal. Yeah. So I'm not saying you shouldn't eat conventional. I will argue fully that if you cannot afford good quality meat and you can only get conventional, it's still a net positive, in my opinion. I still think the nutrition in that is still a massive net positive, and will. But I still think you should seek out good food. And I'll give you two websites, eatwild.com, localharvest.org, if you want to find a local farmer. Get yourself a chest freezer and start buying meat in bulk. Buy half a cow, buy a quarter cow. You really only need one cow a year to eat, and you can get it down for good grass-fed meat down to $6-7 a pound, which is maybe a dollar more than the conventional that you buy at the store. So you got to buy that stuff in bulk. Same thing with eggs. You can either get your own chickens and feed them yourself, high-quality feed, you know, some meat scraps, bugs, worms. Make the eggs nutrient-dense. Don't vaccinate your chickens, too, otherwise you want metals in your egg. And you can increase the nutrient density of your food, make a happier animal, make a happier food that you eat, and then that translates to your health. And I tie that all back to the water memory thing, the installation of emotion into the animal and then you consuming that emotion, essentially.
It has
That's
to
a
matter.
Profound thought.
It does. Has to matter. There's no way in this universe that that doesn't, that you're, it's low quality energy. You're eating
yeah.
from that animal who's lived a low quality existence and had no I don't know, just poor treatment leads to I think the physical body mimics the mental state and of course then on top of that there's the measurables, which is the injecting of vaccines into these animals and the
where does
steroids
that go, though?
That's
another topic that people don't like talking about is when you get if you inundate a pig with toxins, what are they can't sweat, where do those toxins go?
I'm sure it's
your
just
body
collects
fat.
In its body
yeah your body fat is a storage organ for toxins, like genuinely. And there's a guy named Ogenes von der Planitz that I don't know if you've heard of him. He was like big in the raw milk like legalization fight. He's got some interesting books. He's also another proponent of eating like disgusting rotten meat, and said the same thing. It made him feel great. It heals disease. Like, and it's the same thing with milk and kefir. And like, I think fermented foods are life-giving, brain-supporting, immune-supporting, like just profoundly beneficial. And we need more fermented foods of all types. If you want to eat sauerkraut, I would make red cabbage sauerkraut yourself for extra vitamin C. It makes extra vitamin C from the red cabbage. The bacteria does. And then for animal foods, you can get vitamin C from meat as well. You can get it from fresh liver. You can get it from adrenal glands, from spleen, from kidney. Like, organ meats do have vitamin C in it as well. So that's a common argument here. I just wanted to add that. Because, you know, people always say carnivore, oh, where are you going to get your vitamin C from? Well, one, if you're not eating carbohydrates, you need way less. And two, it is in meat. And it's also in, you know, various fermented plant foods that are good for your gut and your digestion. But
when you mentioned sauerkraut, it made me think of Lanny from Greener Postures. She teaches all these amazing classes on how to make things like that. If people are interested in going over
Weston Price too
to check out her work, she's got workshops on how to do all kinds of stuff. Real interesting canning, fermenting, all this handy kitchen stuff that I used to see my grandmother do. When I was a kid.
Yeah, and that because that's how we're supposed to make our food. That's how we've learned. That's how we prepared food for thousands and thousands of years, is with these methods and preparations. And then, you know, technology comes in, refrigerators and, like, pasteurization and, you know, antibacterials and preservatives. And now the focus is not preserving the food in the traditional way. It's preserving it in a way where the shelf life is as long as possible for profit. And then what happens when you eat that preservative? What's that do to your gut bacteria? What does the emulsifier do to your gut bacteria? What does, you know, the pesticide that's in there innately do to your gut bacteria? And I think in those terms all the time. And I think we should just go back to living like the Amish, dude. Like, be a Luddite. Go back to the Amish ways of living. Make your own deodorant. Make your own toothpaste. You know, raise your own animals if you can. Make sure your meat you're buying is from a good farm.
Amish,
that's my
man.
View.
Those Amish, they're onto something.
They know what's up, dude. Healthy as hell, too.
They totally know what's up. What happened with sugar? What happened with our relationship with sugar here in the United States? Because it seems to be a culprit
that has been able to slide under the radar for a long, long time. And of course, we know the war is a racket, Smedley Butler components of the banana wars that were fought. Well, there was also sugar wars that were fought as well. And this industry has always been at the forefront of being in bed with the government. So I'm curious, did the sugar industry buy themselves cover from the United States government?
Yes, they did. I mean, we know that they funded studies that vilified saturated fat. I mean, we know that. That's been talked about by mainstream media, how they funded studies that said saturated fat was the enemy, so you should remove that and replace it with sugar. And I think the way we should look at carbohydrates, very simply, there's a couple of books on like how we used to use carbohydrates to like hunt. So like there are some cultures that would run animals to death, and before they would do that, they would carb load with like these like corn, raw honey, raw milk, things like that. They would carb load a bunch to like really fill their glycogen, store as much water as possible. Then they would run for miles and run these antelope or these deer or whatever species to death. And that's how they would kill it. That was their way of hunting. And I think about it in terms of seasonal availability too. If I were to pick you up, no technology, nothing, you and your wife, and I threw you into the woods and said, live and make a child, what would you? How would you have to eat? You would have to be carnivorous, first and foremost. You would not be able to support the growth of an infant inside the mother's womb and make sure it's adequately developed without carnivory. And that's what that book I mentioned earlier, Nutrition and Physical Degeneration, proves beyond any doubt, that the diet of the mother when they're carrying that child is integral, unbelievably important. That you can look at like bone deformities, things like smaller skulls, underbites, braces, crooked teeth, you know, rickets, like your hips aren't developing properly, so you have to get C-sections. That is all in entirety a lack of fat-soluble vitamins when the mother was carrying that child. Full stop, 100%.
Wow.
That's where that comes from. And when you kind of, when you look at it in terms of seasonal availability, berries are not a year-round food. I mean, unless you're living in the tropics, which a lot of the, you know, human lineage has not been. I'm very white. I'm German, French, Irish, Scandinavian, like Northern European. Mm-hmm. And my lineage is nothing but cattle and dairy farmers. My diet of my ancestor was meat, eggs, and dairy with fermented vegetables and fruit intermittently. And I think about carbohydrates in that same way. We're not supposed to be pounding carbohydrates every day, in my opinion. I don't think we should be eating them all day, every day. I think the only way you can utilize carbohydrates healthfully is if you earn them with physical activity. And that's how I use them. So if I'm having a day where I'm not physically active, I'll go zero carb. If I'm at work where today I spent 7 hours outside in the sun sweating, I drank raw milk and raw honey. That was like a little like electrolytes and carbohydrates that kept me going. My blood sugar did not go above. I test my blood glucose sometimes and it does not go above 110. I have no insulin resistance. I'm not putting on fat. I don't feel tired, fatigued. But if I'm at home sitting around doing nothing and I eat the same amount of sugar, I get tired, I get sleepy, and I get lazy. It makes me like, it brings me down. It does not make me energetic like it would if I was physically active. So that's my perspective on carbs. Second, the preparation of these carbohydrates is important too. I'm sure you've heard, you know, like sourdough bread is very valuable and helpful and for reducing the anti-nutrient content, increasing the bioavailability of protein. I think the type of wheat matters in that context as well. All modern wheat is like a hexaploid, four species of wheat crammed into one, really mutant type of gluten. You know, they're fortified, they're bleached, they're brominated, they're sprayed with tons of pesticides, and we're not physiologically adapted to that type of wheat. But for me, if I eat a modern wheat and I make it the same way I would my ancient wheat, I still get bad symptoms from it, especially the brain fog and mental symptoms. If I eat modern wheat, I feel like I get more mentally ill, honestly. Like, I get, like, I wouldn't say paranoid, but just, like, really uncomfortable in myself. It's a hard feeling to describe, and there's a really good lecture on YouTube you guys can look up. It's called How We Lost Our Minds to Agriculture by Stanton. It's on the Ancestry Foundation YouTube channel. And he makes the argument that agriculture is what made our brain bicameral, that it split our brain into two hemispheres, and that before we were unified, and then agriculture came around, we started consuming a bunch of wheat, and the wheat has, you know, exorphins in it, which are an opioid, and a bunch of other, you know, gut toxins that increase permeability, and that impacted our brain development. And, you know, our brain has shrunk quite a bit in the past 12,000 years, like, significantly. I'm sure you've seen the articles Farming to Blame or Agriculture to Blame for our shrinking brains. And it was that switch in diet. And to bring it back to food preparation, For me, I can eat a sourdough bread if it's an einkorn strain, which is the oldest wheat on earth. It's a type A gluten. When you ferment it, it's a completely digestible protein. It has twice the nutrition. It has much more minerals because it's grown in Europe without pesticides, significantly more nutrient dense, way less reactive. I know a ton of people who have gluten allergies, but they can tolerate that kind of sourdough. So it's not just food preparation. It's where it comes from, the lineage. Look at modern fruit. How much of the – we didn't have these kind of bananas 150 years ago. They're completely a mutant, different type of banana. Apples, like 100 times more sweet. They used to be way more tart. Potatoes, carrots used to be almost inedible and super poisonous, and then we bred them not to be less poisonous. So it's not just food quality and where it comes from. It's what type of food you're eating and where it came from and how old it is. That's my perspective.
Yeah, it matters. All this stuff matters. We have poor soil here, too, in the United States for most of this. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if under one of the additional reasons for our involvement in Ukraine is securing access to those to that
wheat farms. Yeah,
to those.
Well, BlackRock's buying all of it. Yeah, they're buying every bit of that.
Yeah,
that's one argument. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. This is we're using poor soil. We're treating the soil. We're not being mindful of that, over farming, and now we've got the likes of Bill Gates coming in. What's your take on his lab grown meat?
Terrible!
I mean, such an idea so bad that only Bill Gates could be behind it. But I think I must confess, I initially believed that it was going to be very successful, not because it was a good product or it tasted good or anything like that, but because it had money and star power behind it and a narrative that was being crafted about how plant-based meat was going to save the world. And I know it's a scam, but I thought it was going to be successful regardless, just because of the star power. But even with all of that, they haven't been able to make people want to eat this pile of shit that they're serving up. What's the future of lab-grown meat?
I hope it's no future. I hope
Me
all
too.
Of that is completely obliterated. It's like demonic, in my opinion. You're eating like these things are grown with like I think about the spiritual part of it mostly. Like, what you're eating, a conjured food, essentially. You're not eating a real, like, we have no physiological adaptation to it. I have no idea what it's going to do to, like, our gene expression. I mean, we know how, like, in nutrigenomics, how our food affects our gene expression is a profoundly deep rabbit hole. And if any of you have ever had your genetics tested and use websites like NutriHacker, you will quickly find out, especially if you're, like, European ancestry, like, from the northern climates. Your NutriHacker report will scream at you to be carnivorous. I've looked at probably 100 of them, like doing health coaching and helping people throughout the years. Right. And people who are of like more equatorial descent, they have better adaptations for things like beta carotene, for example. I can't convert beta carotene to retinol, period, like at all. Most people who are white cannot convert that. But they'll argue like, oh, beta carotene, your body can make it into vitamin A. If I eat 3 sweet potatoes in a day, I turn orange. Like, I get orange color because my body cannot break it down. But
right.
Someone who is from, like South America towards, the equator, they have a much better capacity to make that conversion, which shows a different adaptation based on ancestral lineage. Doesn't mean they're not carnivorous. We all have the same gut physiology, but they have better adaptations to the food that's available in their environment. So it's not as simple as one diet for everybody. But I will say, like, at a core, undeniable level, on a physiological level, we are a carnivorous species first and opportunistically omnivorous second. Because we need, if we're making the argument that what does a human being need to procreate, make a healthy child? Carnivory. Full stop. You cannot make a healthy, properly, fully developed child with a healthy, fatty brain unless you're eating a carnivorous diet. Period. And you can look at gorillas. So I'll give you, here's a good comparison. And personally, I have qualms with the evolutionary argument. I believe more or less that we were created.
There's some problems with the people behind it, too. That whole Darwin, Malthus, Rothschild, Balfour group. not exactly the best stewards of scientific information.
Yeah.
It's very anti-human.
It makes us animals. It turns us into animals, and I do not think we're like that in that sense. But if we're going to make – let's steel man. If we're supposed, if our pre-human ancestors, let's take a gorilla as an example, like let's say any ape species prior to us, they'll eat A couple thousand calories of plant matter, but then mm-hmm. their gut will ferment that into thousands of calories of saturated fat. So if you look at the gorilla calorie breakdown, there's a couple of studies. It's called the Western Lowland Gorillas. I can't remember the rest of the title, but they looked at the energy breakdown, and they're getting more than 60, 65, 70% of their calories from fat from fermenting fiber in their gut. They also eat their own shit to recycle that fiber. So if you really want to emulate that, like as like a vegan plant-based, you should be eating your own shit. And I do know vegans who have done that for quote unquote B12. Anyways, that is a fit. They have what our appendix used to be in the evolutionary argument. They have a big bag where they ferment that fiber into fat. They also make proteins from it. They make B vitamins. They make various peptides and other cofactors. Humans have no capacity, almost no capacity, to make enough saturated fat from fiber. Know how much we eat? 0 to 4% in some papers, 0 to 7% in others. It's less than 10% for sure, no matter how much you eat. So that right there, physiological example that we are not comparable to those animals. And then they'll go to the argument about brain function. I think the stat is like it's 2% of our body weight but consumes 20% of our calories. For a gorilla, it's like 1/4 of that. Like most of their energy is in their gut. Most of their energy goes to their gut digesting. Most of our energy goes to our brain. Like it's called the expensive tissue hypothesis. It's a very, very interesting topic if you want to dive into that. But if you look at it in nature again, what is the most calorie dense source? It's fat. Fat is 9 calories per gram. Carbs are 4. Protein is 4. So every animal, every mammal on Earth is seeking fat. Fat is the most cherished thing on Earth by far. Paul Saladino has a great lecture on this called Animal Fat, the Most Cherished Thing. There's an author called Mickey Bendor that has a paper on the history of animal fats and how it's been worshipped in every culture as a source of fertility, of life, a giver of life, because you can't have a healthy child without it. You need that fat, because you think about, what is your brain made of? It's made of fat, cholesterol, omega-3s. Mm-hmm. You have to consume the food that creates the being and to support your own. So again, full stop, carnivorous species first, opportunistically omnivorous second. And I think seasonal availability is the thing that most people are missing nowadays, the cyclicality of it. Should you be eating fruit all day of the year? No. Should you be eating, vegetables that are fermented all day of the year? No. Like wheat? No. But carnivory is the one thing that has stayed true throughout. We've always been eating meat, eggs, dairy, seafood. Although I will say seafood nowadays is dangerous because our ocean is a dumpster fire.
For sure. But the key word in all of that is opportunistic.
Yes.
Right. Do we have more opportunity now?
Yes.
And what does that adaptation do to us?
Yes. The opportunity is supermarkets. The opportunity is refrigerators. We can go get these plant foods and keep them in the fridge for way longer than they should be. I mean, you pick fresh berries in the wild, you got to eat them right away. Like, otherwise they start to ferment. But you can ferment them and make an alcohol out of it. That's a whole other rabbit hole. I think alcohol has some evil behind it, in my opinion. I don't think it's always a very positive thing. You look at the stats on alcohol consumption, like 50% of all rapes, murders, and like violent crime is under the influence of alcohol. There's something evil about it.
As somebody that was a bartender for many years, and I was sober while I bartended for 7 years, I was sober. Not that I had a drinking problem. I just didn't want to drink, and I saw some crazy stuff.
It brings out demons in you, dude. It turns off that like filter for your self-control.
It makes people... certain alcohols make certain people want to fight.
Yes.
I knew people that I would say...
Whiskey?
If he was drinking... It was specific to the person. I knew one particular guy that as long as he was drinking Jägermeister, as disgusting as that sounded, he was going to be fine. But the second he switched to tequila, there was going to be a fight. And it was guaranteed. Yeah. I could just...
Tequila is agave, right? Tequila is made from agave, and
not the sort of shit we were selling. I assure you, it was the lowest quality. It was the kind that makes you want to fight everybody in the bar. It was not good. I was not exactly working at a highbrow establishment. I was working at a place where every night was an adventure, and I saw and participated in more fights than I could.
Yeah. Well, man, I'll tell you. I mean, probably won't be happy with me bringing this up because he listens to my podcast, but my dad struggled it when I was a kid. Alcohol would bring out some anger in him. I mean, I've seen this with not only just members of my family, but other people, where alcohol will just bring, sometimes it brings out the worst in you. I know some people who drink and then you just get like very happy, lovey, and just, you know, want to be everybody's friend. That's kind of what I was like when I drank. Mm-hmm. Fun fact, I haven't had a sip of alcohol in over 10 years, so I couldn't tell you how it affects me now, but
yeah, it's something that a lot of people, you know, I never missed it. I'll drink some beers every now and then, but I haven't done a shot in 20 years. Every time I go to a Narcapulco, people are like, let me buy you a tequila shot. I'm like, I'm not doing tequila shots. I am not, because I know that there's, first of all, I'm bad at it, and second of all, there's a huge price to pay, and I want to feel good. You know what I mean? Like, I want to have a good time, but I also want to feel good, and I'm not willing to sacrifice tomorrow
to
party my brains out tonight anymore.
Well, see, for me,
if I want to party anymore.
I go to like the I go to the plant kind of drugs. Like, you ever heard of kava kava? You ever heard of that? It's like it acts on your brain very similarly as alcohol does, and you have things like kratom. You have, I mean,
I've
weed.
Heard of that.
I'm not super against weed, like most people are. I think I've had some of my most profound realizations after smoking, like some like about myself. Like it gives you like a different level of self awareness. But I do know that there is a lot of weed, and this is a whole, we can talk about this as well with detoxification, because I think that is the other lever that we really need to focus on in this incredibly toxic world. And I'll give you kind of an example of what you can do. But
yeah, please, let's do that. Because if we're just talking about the issues and we've got some additional solutions, let's drag them out. Let's get them out there and see if people can detox themselves.
In the context of weed. So let me in the context of weed, if you can look up papers on this, sometimes weed has a high amount of heavy metals in it, like mercury, lead, cadmium, you know. I mean, everything that you're intaking could, like, and I will tell you, the biggest source of heavy metals, period, is plant foods. I mean, you can, Dana Kirkpatrick talked to Paul Saladino, and like kale is full of thallium and lead and cadmium. Chocolate is full of cadmium and lead. A lot of the cruciferous vegetables are packed with heavy metals, and that comes from the soil quality. And then you look at what they're using to make the soil, you know, fertile. They're using biosludges, which are shit from humans, where they're pooping out their pharmaceuticals and their heavy metals and all the other crap. So that's I think one of the biggest sources of exposure. And then obviously vaccines, like we're injecting them straight into your body, aluminum, mercury. And then there's also problems with contamination. There are a bunch of papers, you can look at my Substack. I did a post about this last year, I think sometime in like July or August, about the nano contaminations in vaccines, where not only are the ingredients on the excipient list bad enough, there are also incredible levels of contamination with nickel, you know, thallium, these obscure metals, like radioactive metals even, and other particulates that should not be in there that come from the manufacturing process. And, you know, God forbid, they don't give a crap because they have no legal liability.
No.
Like, who cares? Like, no one's going to sue me. And yeah, like our heavy metal exposure nowadays is one of the largest levers for mental illness, in my opinion. Like, by far the largest.
It's really a problem.
No one talks about it. Really.
They don't. And this blood-brain barrier and the situations with vaccines and aluminum.
And EMF.
That's when it first got on my radar. Yeah, yeah, EMF is something that now you start talking about that, you know, in 2020 with... I've never had videos demonetized and deleted faster than when I was talking to Alana Freeland about EMF.
EMF. Yeah, I think it's just like, again, like if instead of looking at it as a causal factor, look at it at in terms of the terrain. What does the EMF do? And if you guys want to go look up this report, it's called the Bioinitiative Report. It's the most thorough review on EMF and radio frequencies and electric fields ever done in like human history. It is incredibly thorough, like dozens of like very high quality, well-educated like neuroscientists, people familiar with like electrical engineering and like, you know, biologists and human physiology. And they find very consistently that blood-brain barrier permeability, which means more crap that's in your bloodstream can get into your brain. That's one big thing from exposures. It also affects your gut bacteria profoundly, which is, again, going to affect your brain because they make your neurotransmitters. Like, we are surrounded in a soup of frequencies, and I think the people that are alive today are better adapted to it because that's what we do as a species. We adapt to our environment and get better and better at dealing with whatever onslaught we're dealing with. And nowadays, we're getting hit from every vector imaginable. Like, you're seeing articles about forever chemicals and heavy metals and, like, your shaving cream or the applesauce you're feeding your kid is full of lead or the chocolate is full of cadmium. Like, we are getting hit from every vector imaginable. And that ties back into the importance of knowing where your food comes from, what kind of soil it was growing on, how they treated the animal, and then getting rid of it. That's what I think. I had lead poisoning for a period of time, personally, and that was a very eye-opening experience because of what it did to my mind. My time perception was very interesting, where I would have like weeks and months go by, and it didn't really feel like that. It was just like I was on autopilot. Worse memory, a little more irritable, like just not high-quality, good, positive thoughts like you would expect. Like, and this was during the carnivore diet, too. This is when I had, I think this was like 2019, beginning of COVID, 2020. Or no, was it 2021? Somewhere around there. And I don't know if it came from a sketchy brand of yerba mate I was buying from like a bulk seller in Argentina. I bought this pan from Goodwill. It was like a ceramic pan. It had scratches in it. I know you can get lead from that. I wasn't aware of it. I don't know where it came from, but I got a hair and blood analysis and I had high levels of lead and nickel. And detoxifying that taught me a lot about the detoxification system. So I'll simplify it and try to make it easy for you guys to understand. Number one, sweating. You sweat out so much garbage, like so much. Plastics, pesticides, heavy metals. Your sweat is, your skin and your sweat is an organ for getting rid of toxins. I mean, that's why we have such, we sweat so much, is because it's really good at handling our environment, especially when we're, you know, physically active. And next thing is your liver and supporting that's health, and that comes down to bioflow. So what happens in your body is you have an antioxidant called glutathione. It's a master antioxidant. I'm sure you've heard of it. Mm-hmm. And that is always conjugating toxins, and then it's getting dumped from your liver into your gut via bile salts. These like fatty emulsions of conjugated glutathione with fats into your gut. If you have a permeable gut, you're going to reabsorb those toxins. If you have a leaky gut, you're going to just keep reabsorbing what your body's trying to detoxify. You're never going to get rid of it. So most important is having a healthy gut. And that, again, fermented foods, carnivory, you know, gelatin, like bone broth that you make yourself, good fermented foods that don't exacerbate the gut problem. And then binders. Severely underrated. I think a lot of more people should be taking activated charcoal regularly, especially at night.
Why at night as opposed to in the morning?
Okay, so in the morning, because one, it's going to bind up what you eat throughout the day. Charcoal is like, it's non-discriminative. It's going to bind nutrients, and if you're taking like any supplements, it's going to bind almost everything. So you want to do it at the end of the day when you're sleeping, and that's where most of your detoxification happens. And this is another important factor, is the type of way you sleep. You can look at my X profile. There was a study on your glymphatic system, your brain detoxification system, and sleep position. So if you sleep on your left side or your back, you're good. If you sleep on your right side or your stomach, you're not detoxifying properly. Not only that, your stomach can't empty right, your bile salts aren't getting released as they should, so sleep position even works. So what I like to do, and I think zeolite, I'm sure you've heard of that, like chimpentolite clay, zeolite clay, very, very good, but you should use that sublingually. Charcoal, bentonite clay, diatomaceous earth, three really good tools for detoxifying, and you want to try to use those before bed. So my regimen, if you want to stimulate bile flow substantially, you want to look for bitter compounds. Things like roasted dandelion tea. Coffee can too, but coffee is also full of mycotoxins very often, which shut off the pathway for detoxification in and of itself. So I'm not a big fan of coffee personally, unless you know it's from a pristine, good, well-cared-for source. Like all the coffee you buy at the store, you are poisoning yourself. I'm sorry, but you just are. And I think you should switch to yerba mate. It's better in every way imaginable, in my opinion. Much cleaner, more B vitamins, more minerals. Has the same bitter compounds. Anyways, you want to bind what your gut is dumping when you go to sleep at night. So you do dandelion tea an hour before bed. You can do an Epsom salt bath where you're sipping on the tea and you're getting a ton of magnesium and sulfate to ramp up your glutathione tremendously. While you're drinking that dandelion tea, your liver is going to start dumping those bile salts. It's going to stimulate bile flow, which is going to have all those toxins going into your gut. And then right before bed, you take a little of the zeolite clay, you put it under your tongue, and you leave it there. And then 15, 20 minutes later, after it's dispersed, you take, like right before bed, like 5 minutes before you lay down, you take activated charcoal, bentonite clay, diatomaceous earth, and you chug that down, you go to bed, you wake up in the morning, and it is profoundly beneficial for getting rid of metals. That was my regimen that got rid of my lead nickel poisoning. And I've seen, you know, I've seen kids with autism turn around, like over a dozen, who in a month they become radically different. They go from smacking their face, stimming, not talking, not making eye contact, to being happy, playful kids. Just doing that.
Whoa.
It's dirt cheap detoxification. You don't have to use chelators that are really dangerous. None of the ALA, which can make your life miserable.
What's ALA?
There are people who get, like, they find out they got mercury poisoning and they take a bunch of ALA and it destroys their life. They go fucking insane because it'll liberate the mercury and just put it somewhere else.
And sometimes it's a worse place.
So I think you want to go low and slow, dirt cheap, safe detoxification method. And if you want to even ramp it up even more, sauna. So, like, do your sauna, drink dandelion tea, Epsom salt bath to get your minerals back. And then I can kind of explain how to, you know, make your mineral water. Sorry, if you hear my cat in the background.
I can hear the cat, yeah.
She's kind of going nuts.
Get some cat activity. We get normally when I'm back at home, I'll get a cat on my lap during these podcasts, sitting there quietly. But that's all right. We have a...
She's trying to get up here. Okay, she's good now. She wanted attention. So, yeah, man, it's sauna, and then like 30 minutes of sauna, profoundly beneficial for detoxification. You get rid of so much garbage with that. And then, like I said, dandelion tea, stimulate the bile flow. You know, Epsom salt bath, just soak your feet or spray some magnesium on your legs. Use those binders right before bed, and you are doing so much good for your detoxification system. And then, do you want to know about mineral water and how I make mine personally?
Yeah.
So, have you heard of Shilajit?
No.
Shilajit? Okay, another, it's called the, I think, historically... like the conqueror of mountains, because it has so many good trace minerals in it, and like fulvic acid and all these other constituents that are really good for just hormonal health, but also detoxification. So my mineral water is I distill my own water. You can also use reverse osmosis, but I think distillation is the best by far. It gets rid of everything almost.
Yeah.
Very, very few things make it through distillation, if any. And then you add your own bulk minerals back to it. I use pure. There's a brand on Amazon that's like really good, high quality pure minerals of magnesium chloride, because I think it's the most bioavailable. You can look at some interesting studies on it, and it has the most bioavailability. It's also got the chloride for supporting your stomach acid, hydrochloric acid. You need chloride from that to make stomach acid, which is, again, essential for your gut health. Potassium bicarbonate. Bicarbonate is incredibly good for your kidneys and detoxification and numerous other benefits. We're supposed to be getting it from our spring water, but again, it's been farmed out. It's completely taken up, you know, by large-scale agriculture and everything else that comes with it. And then Shilajit, really, really good. I buy these little pucks on Amazon. I just drop in the water. And then the last thing is trace mineral drops. You've heard of those, like the trace minerals, Megamag. I do Megamag or just like the standard trace mineral drops, like 10 to 15. I don't do like the actual serving size. Then I expose it to sunlight. That is a really key part. I don't know if you've gone into like the water structure.
No, explain that.
So the idea is that Gerald Pollack has some research on this. I think it's like Easy Water, and I'm no expert. Like, I have like a very like rudimentary understanding, but essentially the light energy from the sun alters the structure of the water and increases its ability for your body to absorb it. Like, it makes it more easily absorbed in your gut, small intestine, and then etc. But it increases it has a measurable benefit on the structure of the water, and I think the assimilation of the minerals. So distilled water, add your minerals to it, Shilajit, exposed to sunlight, and you have the cleanest, highest quality, most hydrating water on earth that will support your detoxification system. If you want to take it a step further, you can add silica to it. If any of you guys want to look this up who are listening, silica challenge test with aluminum and Alzheimer's. I'm sure you've heard like Alzheimer's is connected to aluminum toxicity.
Yep.
And they'll give people silica supplements and they just start pissing out shit tons of aluminum. So if you suspect aluminum toxicity or exposure, add some bamboo extract to your water or some silica, like pure silica or diatomaceous earth, also rich in silica. And that will help you get rid of the aluminum that's in your noggin and wherever else. You do all those things, you are going to be getting rid of a significant portion of your environmental toxins that you're exposed to, either from food, vaccines, or wherever else. That is detoxification.
Yeah, that's what we need. We need to do that. Hey, where is... So, if someone is listening to this and they're like, I need help, this sounds... I want to do it, but it sounds complicated. Can they hire you to work with them?
Yeah, I talked about this on Nephilim Death Squad. I got a buddy that's supposed to be building a website for me, but he's been busy. He has his own business too. And I do want to do health coaching, and I don't want to gouge people either. I see all the time where these health coaches are charging like $300, $400, $500 an hour, and I find that to be egregious personally, because most of the time people without money need help the most. And I'm just like, I'm an IT nerd. I quit IT a few years ago. I was making $25-$30 an hour, so I figure, like, why not just make it the same? You want an hour of my time, $30-$40. I feel like that's significantly cheaper, and it's the same concepts that they're going to be teaching in terms of, you know, detoxification. And I have very different views on diet. I think carnivory is most important, and a lot of fermented foods. But yeah, I mean, if you want to reach out, you can always DM me on my my ex profile. I will have a website coming up here pretty soon that will have like a Calendly on it where you can sign up and pick an hour, because I still work a full time job. I work you know, 8 to 4 full time job, Monday through Friday. But yeah, I would love to do health coaching. I'm already working with the NDS folks, Raven and Top Lobster, on them doing a similar regimen. And, you know, funny enough, Raven, we were talking on the pod a few days ago, and he has been drinking coffee and getting, like, you know, very brain foggy and not able to focus. And I told him, like, that might be just the one thing that's ruining your life, because it could be the mycotoxins. It could be, like, my reaction to coffee. I don't respond well to it either. And he hits me up today. He started using yerba mate, and he feels significantly, he already feels better. He had a great day, high focus, like doing good. It could, that's what I mean, dude. Like, you guys, you have to be super neurotic and granular and like troubleshoot and experiment all the time. You never know when one food is ruining your life. You really, it's so simple.
Well, it's amazing that you've done a lot of the research for people. So for them to be able to have you as a resource to reach out, and maybe, you know, maybe not right away, but what's the best place for people to find you? Is it on X, at Inversionism? Yeah.
You know what I'm going to do, though? Like, right after this pod, I'm going to go set up a Calendly and then put it on my bio site you guys can see it. It's in my my profile. If you click my profile up at the very top, it's a bio.site/Inversionism.
Okay.
I will put a Calendly there if you want to sign up. Because I, like, anytime after 4 o'clock Central Time, I can do some coaching. If you want to talk to me for half an hour or an hour, I'll do both, like half an hour, like $25, or an hour, like $40, something like that.
Okay.
And yeah, you can reach out if you want to. I've already got over a dozen messages from the NDS pod of people reaching out.
Yeah.
And a little overwhelming. It's hard to keep up with everybody.
Yeah.
Asking for help. And I'm trying to make some guides right now, actually. I'm going to make a post on Substack for like the mineral water basics, detoxification, how to build your own infrared sauna. That's another great thing people can do for cheap.
For sure.
Really easy.
There's the first step is you got to recognize you have a problem, right? And we have a problem collectively as a society in America. We have a poisonous food. They're spraying us with God knows what. They're injecting us with poison.
Oh, God, don't get me started on that.
I know the world is set up against this. So we recognize it. They call us crazy for recognizing it, but we recognize it nonetheless. And
yes,
now we come up with some plans for how to move ourselves out of the way, how to not fall into their traps, and then to, on top of all of that, detoxify ourselves so that whatever they've done to us in the past doesn't carry forth with us into the future.
Yeah.
And man, it's, I'll tell you what, it is number one. It's the most important thing we can do, because when you feel shitty, you would give anything to feel better. You know, it's just, your health is just one of those things that we are all guilty of taking for granted when we feel good. And unfortunately for you, you went through the ringer. But I'll tell you what, you're going to look back on this and say your life's calling was to make people healthy, and you wouldn't have been able to do it if you hadn't gone through what you'd gone through. So, I mean, in a weird way, you're going to look back on this and be like, that saved my life, and as a result, it changed my life.
I'm glad it happened. In the end, I really am. I'm glad it happened. I'm glad, I mean, it was a lot of suffering from 17 to like 26. Yeah, a lot of, you know, a lot of depression, anxiety, reclusivity, where I just, yeah, man, it sucks. And then once you get that back, yeah, you just want to share the word. You just want to tell people what worked for you.
For sure.
Share how it's done. And yeah, I mean, can I ask you one thing about the,
sure.
We were talking about the environmental exposures. Like, you're familiar with like the pesticide spraying that they do often for like mosquitoes.
Yes.
Rogan talked about this on the podcast, and it was like the day after I made a post about it. He follows me. I don't know if he read it, but they'll drive through New York and just spray pesticides into the air openly.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing like back, you know, during polio and DDT. I am of the opinion that DDT is what caused it, and some arsenic, but mostly DDT exposure, because they were just spraying kids in the face with it, going to swimming pools and just dousing them.
Yeah.
That's another thing that really bugs me, when people automatically say, like, oh, I got a virus, oh, I got a pathogen. It's like, well, did you just walk down the road after they sprayed a bunch of pesticides? Because that'll make you have flu-like symptoms, too. I mean, was it a day where they're spraying a bunch for geoengineering? Like, it's a lot of things.
They did that in Mexico when we were down there in Acapulco, because they had had the hurricane. They had they had problems with mosquitoes. And so they just did Mexico the way you do Mexico. They just drove a truck down the street and just started fumigating. Yep. And it got some of the people that I know. I mean, one of the girls that I know that went down there got sick real bad after that. So it happens
all the time, dude.
It's a real thing.
And doctors never diagnose it like that. It's always a pathogen. It's always a virus.
Exactly.
Every time.
It's never what we're being sprayed.
Yeah.
There's a lot of poisons out there. But I'll tell you what. I appreciate the actionable information that people can incorporate into their day-to-day lives, and I get it. You know, you maybe aren't going to do every single thing on the list, but if you're aware of it and you start taking these steps, I think once you make some progress, you'll probably feel like continuing down
Absolutely.
The path. Yeah, I appreciate it. That's Dolan, cool. Everybody, from Inversionism. I'll tell you what, you've got several hundred, I don't know, 150,000 Twitter.
163,000.
You must be doing something right. Your information is always fascinating. I really appreciate you coming on and letting everybody know about, you know, what we face in this world in terms of the food and how to maneuver around that. I'll tell you what, if you guys want to connect with me, the best way to do that is the website macroaggressions.io. You can go check out everything. And if you haven't done so already and you think we've done a good job, please, we would appreciate a 5-star review on your way out the door. Thanks, everybody. I'll talk to you again soon.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.